Welcome to Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. In each of our programs, our intention is to bring to our listeners the best of people, places and projects of Northern California that we think you're going to enjoy and that we think are exceptional. Today I have in the studio the Shasta County Sheriff, Michael Johnson. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. Nice to have you in the studio. And one of the things I would like to really focus on today is the Corrections and Rehabilitation Campus. Lots of controversy going on around it, but I think it's good for our listeners to get to an overview of the department. Obviously, right in Redding, California, there's the offices, but you also have outer line offices. So can you describe those?
Sure. It's a pretty big operation. Yeah. It is spread out. So we have the main, which we call the main, and that is on Park Marina Circle. And that on that three-story building, the top floor is the Sheriff's Administration. Second floor is the Major Crimes Unit, called MCU, the detectives. Mm-hmm. And then on the bottom floor is the lobby, of course, where we do walk-in business and concealed weapons permits and registrations and stuff like that. We also have the South County substation, South County Station, I should say, which is our main patrol station. And that is a brand new building that we're occupying, a pretty large footprint. It's generally across from the airport there. Yeah. And that beautiful building we have now, we run the Office of Emergency Services and our main patrol out of that building. We have a substation in Burney, which serves the Intermountain region, Fall River, Mills, MacArthur, Oak Run, those areas out there.
Fall River, Mills, Oak Run.
We also have a substation in Burney, which serves the Intermountain region. The Intermountain region generally is Fall River, Mills, MacArthur, Burney, Oak Run, that eastern part of the county. And let's see, we have a coroner's office off of Breslauer, and we also have an ID lab, which is evidence and technical, like a crime scene investigations. That's also off of Breslauer. We have the boating safety unit off of Shasta Lake. We run the second largest freshwater boating safety unit in the state.
Wow.
And we have a contract city in Shasta Lake City, where we have, lieutenant and sergeants and patrol officers run out of that one and kind of do city policing, if you will, for them. And, geez, I think we run an alternative custody program on Breslauer right now. And I think that about covers the major parts of the Sheriff's Department umbrella.
How many officers? Let's say how many in staff?
240 roughly full-time sworn employees. We have just about, it fluctuates between 250 and 300 volunteers, which primarily are search and rescue, but those volunteers also cover other aspects of helping out with administration and other duties. And we have a few reserve officers.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big group.
It is a big group. Great men and women that I work with in this organization, and very proud of the service to the community and what everybody does. I forgot we have a civil division as well. So
can't forget anyone.
No. The civil division is housed now with our accounting unit, and they are over by the DA's office. So that's another building away from the main.
And when you say civil division, what are they up to?
Civil division. So the civil division deals with serving civil subpoenas, dealing with anything civil that's not criminal related that the sheriff's department helps handle.
I see. Yeah. Okay. The other thing I like to have our guests do is give an overview where you grew up and what brought you to Shasta County.
Okay. I was born and raised in Gilroy, California.
Yeah.
I'm a son to two teachers. My mom and dad were both teachers and one vice principal at one time. I worked in a lumberyard for most of my early career. And after I graduated high school, I worked, stayed at that lumberyard for about a year. And then I went on to build custom remodels and homes for a couple of years, saved my money, applied for Humboldt State University, ended up getting engaged and moving to Humboldt in Eureka. I ended up being there for about 17 years. I got a degree, a biology degree in wildlife management. And I went to the California Fish and Game Academy because my goal was to become a game warden.
Mm-hmm.
Tested for them, was on their list, did very well, but the state takes forever. So I got tired of being a starving college student and waiting.
Yes.
So I applied with a local PD there, Eureka Police Department, got hired as an officer. Lo and behold, I was fairly good at that job and liked it. So I dropped out of the fishing game list and stayed in law enforcement.
Ah.
Yeah. And then from there, I moved to and went to the FBI Academy. And after that academy, I got a job as chief of police in Amador County, the little prison city of Ione. I worked there for about 5 years. And then I came to Anderson as the police chief in Anderson. Did about 10 years in Anderson as police chief, and the last five have been with as your Shasta County Sheriff.
Yes. What a wonderful. I thought it was fascinating. The original degree is in what?
Biology, wildlife management. Yeah.
So you're in wildlife management, but a different kind of wildlife.
Lynn, I tell everybody that all the time. I said, I work within my degree. I just manage pavement wildlife.
Now. Yes. Too funny.
Yes.
Well, we're glad you're here. And obviously you have a long history in law enforcement and lots of diverse background.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, over 30 years I've got in law enforcement now, and it's been a great career. It's been a tough career. It takes its toll on your family and stress and everything. But I don't get me wrong. I don't regret it. I love what I do, and I love the agency I'm at now. Probably most of all, it's been a challenge, and serving a broader based community is very rewarding.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I know many people are wondering about what's happening with this corrections and rehabilitation project that you have in mind.
Yes.
And this has been brewing for some time, hasn't it?
Quite a while. Yeah. This is like the probably third different version of a campus that's come together since I've opened my mouth as the chief of police of Anderson and trying to do something better for the broader base community.
And when you think about other agencies like the district attorney's office and City of Reading PD, Anderson PD, other forms of law enforcement, do you think they support this project?
Actually, I know they support this project 100%. I went, those are all my partners, and
yeah.
I can't be successful without them, and they can't be successful without me. So it's a two-way street there. And so as I was embarking on this vision of improving the criminal justice system, if you will, for this county, I brought all those people in as partners early on, got their input, got their suggestions, and they have been 100% supportive.
Excellent. And I think it's important for people to understand the Sheriff Department is responsible for operation of the jail.
Yes, absolutely. We are. Probably my biggest headache.
Yeah. I can imagine.
Running a jail is like running a mini city.
Wow.
There is so much to it. And because of California and the way that we've become a litigious state, it is a litigious entity. I mean, we get sued regularly for stuff, everything that we're doing right and according to law, and we still suffer lawsuits in there. It's ridiculous at times.
Yeah, which, you know, it takes time to address, takes money to address, unfortunately. So let's paint a picture of what current things are going on in the jail as far as its multiple level. How many stories?
It's actually about 8-9 stories, but it's 3 different levels, really, is what we operationally call it. You know, the basement and the sally port is where they pull in to book people, and then they're assigned to different pods within that jail structure. The jail is very old and antiquated, and it's built at the time, I'm sure it was state of the art, and it was the way corrections were going, but corrections have changed so much that that building is not ideal or for functionality and for staffing and everything else. It's really like a old school SHU unit where their prisoners are confined to a small cell, and there's not adequate rec yards and programming space and medical and everything, and all that. It's all, those are all single space entities within the jail. So what I'm saying is, like, your rec yard for people, they have to get a certain amount of rec yard time every day. And so instead of having a rec yard on every level, we have one rec yard, and we have to move prisoners up and down that within that facility all day long. And same for medical and same for everything else that goes on there. It's not an ideal setup. The other problem with the jail is every cell is a two-man cell. And so when people come in and they go through classification, and we, you know, determine whether they're gang affiliated, where they have mental health problems, all sorts of different things, male, female. If you get somebody who is, and there's a lot of them that are high profile type of inmates, then you can't house them with somebody else. So now your two-man cell turns into a one-man cell. And the pods are split up by classification as well. So I may have, you know, I may not be at capacity, and somebody comes in, and let's say you came in, Lynn, and we classify you, okay, she's a gang member, she has mental health, she has to be in the women's unit. Well, that pod that you'd classify in might already be full. Yeah. And so even though I have space elsewhere in the jail, I can't put you elsewhere in the jail. I have to put you in that pod somewhere. So now I have to go through my roster and kick out the least of the worst to house you. So it's a constant challenge to operationally and logistically fit people into that structure.
And the reason you can't put them elsewhere is because of the classification designates male, female, and what the issues are. So it's not appropriate to say someone has a mental health issue and put them in a gang area.
Correct. Yeah. That's a good example. Yeah, yes, yeah. That's exactly right. And, you know, there's certain custody laws and rules that dictate that as well. And just from the mere fact of safety and care of our inmates, we can't do that. You wouldn't want to put somebody who is a child predator or something in with the general population, because they'll end up dead. And it's our responsibility to care for the inmates.
Yes. And you hear people say catch and release. People will be arrested and they are not incarcerated.
Yes.
And that's because of the issue you're talking about.
Yes. Capacity is usually it. There's also bail reform. People don't understand that quite clearly either, and nor should they. You're not in the profession, you don't know. But with bail reform, you know, a lot of these people that get convicted and sentenced, or even awaiting their trial, have the right to bail. And despite whether we all as a community and a society think they should remain in custody, they may make bail. And if they make bail, I can't override a judge and what was set for that bail and their parameters to get that. If they make bail, they make bail and they get to get out. And a lot of those catches and releases, that's what happens based on the bail schedule, the crime that they've been booked in for, and everything else, they may have the opportunity to get out.
And if someone is, say, accused of a felony versus a misdemeanor, is that a factor in the decision, or is it more violent, nonviolent?
It's both.
Both,
Usually the violent and nonviolent is the top tier consideration. We don't want to release violent people, and we do everything we can to hold those. But also then felony versus misdemeanor, felony rises a little higher in the priority than a misdemeanor does. And all this that we're talking about and the catch and release frustrates the heck out of the deputies and officers on the street. And all of that goes towards this whole vision of this campus that we're setting up, because although we run an alternative custody program now, and we have, you know, I told you 80 to 110 people a month on that. Really what's happening at the alternative custody is not what should be happening. We want to have a mechanism where we not only hold people accountable. So if you are a catch and release, if you will. Maybe somebody who has a theft issue and a drug issue or something, which is nonviolent, we want to send them to alternative custody. And currently they come to alternative custody and we farm out people, basically, for lack of better terms, to different entities within the community that need help. For instance, during rodeo, I sent a lot of inmates over there to help in their alternative custody program to work the day at setting up for the rodeo, cleaning up, doing chores that need to be done to help run that rodeo. But what happens is they show up and I just farm them out to work, and then they come back and then their day is done. We teach them nothing. We treat nothing. It's just a revolving door, if you will, type of setup. So what I want to do with this new alternative custody is create a situation where, so Lynn Fritz comes in and she is, let's say you have petty theft and vandalism and you mm-hmm. go to court. So you'll have the opportunity either pay your fine and do some jail time, or would you like to participate in the alternative custody program and work your time off? So you choose alternative custody program. So now they come out to this campus. The very first thing they would do after they get debriefed by the deputy and get a schedule set up is we assign them a case manager. And that case manager then sits down with Lynn and says, okay, Lynn didn't complete high school, so she needs some education. She has a drug and alcohol issue, so she's going to need drug and alcohol counseling. And she has no really job skills, so we're going to find out what she's interested in and maybe train her vocationally while she's at this program. So now when you show up during your first part of your day at the alternative custody program, we've built out a program for you where everything's on site. Well, maybe you go to work on your education for the first hour. Maybe the second hour you go into drug and alcohol counseling and that type of program. Maybe the next couple hours we work on some type of vocational training for you. And then maybe the last half of the day you actually do some of that work and some of that community stuff that we need. And then you come back on a daily basis and we monitor you. We're not just giving you time to work somewhere. We're mm-hmm. actually treating some of your symptoms and hopefully building a better community responsible person that we're not going to see on a regular basis in a revolving door.
Yeah.
Now the hammer for that, because there has to be accountability for yes. everything. There has to be accountability. So the alternative custody program is a leg where I can use people that are currently in custody in my jail. I have a certain population that would qualify for the alternative custody program if I had a big enough one, that are in my jail.
And so, do they have the option of doing it or not?
No, because they're
part of the sentencing.
Yeah, it's part of the sentencing, and they're a little higher level. They're not necessarily violent, but they may have lower level felonies or multiple misdemeanors that have caused them to be in custody. So by taking some of those people and putting into this program, the other program that we're going to talk about that'll be out there, I make space in the jail. So now let's go back to our example of Lynn Fritz and come into alternative custody and have this program set up for her. So let's say Lynn quits cooperating and she becomes back in her lifestyle, whatever reason, she quits showing up. So now, okay, well, you were given the opportunity to do alternative custody. You've chose to cast that away. So now we're going to fall back on what your sentence was, and I have room for a jail to put you in jail to serve your time in the jail. And that's what I'm trying to do, is build in accountability for the community, for the population that I'm dealing with, and also a chance to rehabilitate and change the lifestyle of some of these people so we're not dealing with the same issues over and over and over.
Which would be incredible to do.
And if I don't have that, and that's what I don't have right now, I have a jail that runs at capacity all the time. And that scenario I gave you where we have to triage and kick yeah. out the least of the worst is happening on a regular basis. If I have space in the jail, then I don't have to do that, and I can hold people accountable. And hopefully the turn of custody program becomes something that they want to participate in, that they are thriving in, and they show up. And we don't have to deal with them on a regular basis, and we break that cycle a little bit.
When they're in the alternative custody program, are they housed on site or
no?
Okay, they do it from home.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's what's very unique about this part of the campus is zero housing here. This is a day reporting center.
Day reporting. Yeah. Okay. That makes
sense.
And
when I say day reporting, we'll probably run it somewhere like 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. or something like that, but and 7 days a week, because there are going to be people that actually have jobs they have to go to, and we're going to be flexible with schedules and try to make this a really a wraparound services. On that alternative custody portion, Lynn, the intent is to partner with HHSA, Health and Human Services, with some nonprofits, and have different outbuildings all on this campus. So they show up, like I said, if you, part of your thing is going to get some education, maybe I'll have a building which is for that purpose, and I'll have entities that do that education. I'm not an expert in mental health or drug rehabilitation or education. I'm an expert in custody and law. So I'll rely on those partners to have buildings and have programs on my footprint which can serve this population. So when you show up, I don't have to send you to different places within Reading,
yes,
which is all spread out, which they hardly make because
transportation's an issue
and things get in the way in between,
yes,
point,
yes,
A and point B. So it'll be all wraparound services on one footprint.
One site, which is very different than what you have now.
Very different.
The question I also want you to address is when you do release of someone, is it just out to the street? Do some of them have ankle monitors? So I'm going to do a station ID, and I want to come back and ask you to answer that. What's going on currently? If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We are here in conversation with Shasta County Sheriff Michael Johnson, where we're talking about the current situation that goes on with incarceration in the jail, but also looking for the vision for the Correction and Rehabilitation Campus Project. I mean, to me, it's like a breath of fresh air, hope for the future. So sometimes when you release people that have committed a crime and there's no space in the jail for them, Do any of them have ankle monitors? How's that work? How do you determine?
Yeah, absolutely. Our higher profile and potentially violent people that or have some history of that, we ankle monitor. We work closely with not only our own units, civil units part of that as well, but probation is part of that as well. Yes, they are ankle monitored and they're tracked. And I'm not all of them. Don't get me wrong. Not every single person fits that criteria, but the ones that are of concern to the community, absolutely we do.
And is the concern to the community, does that always include felons, or they depends on their type
no,
of felony?
You can have, there is violent misdemeanors that they don't quite get a rise to the level of a felony charge, but or they plea bargain out, so it's not a felony technically on the books, but we know the case history and their own personal criminal history, so they would fit that profile. Again, it's all classification type of stuff.
Yes, and it's my understanding for the project, the Corrections and Rehabilitation Campus Project, initially you have, it's three phases, correct?
Three phases.
And the last of which is the construction of the jail.
Correct.
And it will look very different than what we currently have. Right now you talked about 8-9 stories versus this project will be one level.
Yeah, it will. It'll be probably a two level, but
two
one,
level?
One story. So we're not going up. We're
yes.
not doing elevators. We're not there because there's all kinds of issues with not just the cost of running a multi-level facility, but also with ADA issues and staffing. You can cut your staffing almost in half for the same population if you set your facility up right.
Yeah.
The way it's structured now in the jail we operate out of takes a lot of staff to run that facility, and we could do it much better and much more efficiently with a better design.
And in the past, there's been conversations about one story of the jail not being occupied due to lack of staffing.
Yes. When I first came in as sheriff, we had that problem. We were down over 20 correctional officers there, correctional deputies in the jail. And because of the staffing it takes to do that, we were mandatory overtime for every employee in there, and nobody was getting days off, and it just led to burnout and us losing more employees. So we had to shut down a level of that jail just to staff two of the levels in the jail and care for the inmates that we had. So that was not a good situation and not something I wanted to do. I never want to turn people out into the community, but also I'm running an operation that has to be fixed. So we've come a long way. We were close to fully staffed in the jail now. Morale's different there. We've put in a bunch of different programs that are being very successful. For instance, one of the things that used to happen at the jail was when it gets time for you to gate, in my world, that means to be released from jail. If it was the middle of the night, we'd just release you in the middle of the night, kick you out the doors onto the streets of Reading, right in downtown Reading.
Wow.
We try not to do that anymore. We try to connect you with services starting a few weeks prior to the date you're going to be released and start getting you in line and in touch with the right people that is your support network. And then we try to release you during business hours where you're not out in the middle of the night in the cold and downtown Reading breaking windows and stealing and causing problems. So that's just one example of what's going on there. We have different programs put in place to watch over the inmates, to monitor their health. We have a new medical provider. This is a big one. We have a new medical provider that started June 1st, and we've doubled the medical staffing inside of that jail.
Wow.
And, they're running clinics daily, and things have changed tremendously there. The care for the inmates has gone up tenfold.
It sounds like, too, in listening to the conversation that we're having, that it's a better strategy, better use of funds, a better use of manpower, you might say, because it being one story versus having the multiple stories, and that having a campus that really expands the services, so hopefully there's rehabilitation in the incarceration process.
There absolutely is. We have a big effort that we put into that. I'll give you an example. We have a mental health pod, and it's called the JBCT program, jail-based competency training. And so what it is we run a mental health restoration type of program within our jail. And we're unique because not every jail in the state does that. And as a matter of fact, we got some good accolades from the state director of mental health. Just a couple of weeks ago, he was on the phone with our captain, and we had seen, got a ding, if you will, the county did for some of the mental health programs. And so we're on the phone with him, and he made the statement, "Oh, this isn't against you, the sheriff's office, and the jail at all." He's like, "You guys run an exceptional program in the state, and it's a good model for a lot of the other jails to follow." That's a big feather in our cap to hear that, because we not only run it for Shasta County, but I've got our surrounding counties sending people into that program. And once they're done and released, they restore them to competency, basically. When somebody goes, gets arrested, goes to court, and the court finds them IST, which is incompetent to stand trial, they go into this program, get on medication, counseling, and a pretty regimented program, and get restored to competency so they can participate in their own criminal defense. That's how it works.
And that's on-site?
That's on-site.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah, and it's super successful. Most people don't know about it. We take a lot of criticism about mental health and stuff, and people have no idea that we're doing to the degree that we are. And again, Lynn, I'm not a mental health professional, and neither are my correctional deputies. So those services come from the outside, come into the jail and run that program. We don't do that, run that program ourselves. We oversee it and assure everybody's safety and care for the inmates, but we don't run the program.
Yes. So you said other counties send people here.
Yeah.
Why does that occur?
Well, that is a matter of the state helps fund that program and helps fund that pod that we have dedicated to that, because a lot of our surrounding counties just don't have the capacity and the ability, the money, the resources to do that. So our options are you send them to a jail that has a JVCT program, or you send them to the state hospital. And the state, in their infinite wisdom, recently implemented a cap on how many people we can send to the state hospital per year. And if you go over that cap, they fine you $100,000 per person at the end of the year. And I can't afford $100,000 per person. And for us, that number's like 45. And we easily could send double that to the state hospital every year.
And the ones that are referred from other counties only deal with mental health issues or all issues?
What do you mean by that?
The ones coming from other counties, are they coming and being housed here because of crimes they've committed, or is it because of the mental health services that you provide on site?
I only deal with people in the criminal justice system. So, yes, they've committed a crime in their own county or wherever they're from, and they're facing the same thing. They've gone to court and been deemed incompetent to stand trial, and so they send them to us for restoration, then we send them back to county, and
that's the ones with that issue.
Yes.
Yes, okay. That's what I just wanted to clarify, because I don't want people thinking, oh, they send everyone here.
No. That's not how it works. And very clearly, I've always been on the mantra and the belief that I don't want to be importing people's problems into Shasta County and own those problems. I'm willing to be a partner and help, but once they're done, they go back to your county of origin.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because it's just not fair to the citizens of Shasta County to try to take on other people's problems.
Yes. And the correctional officers that are in the current jail, do they have training to be a correctional officer?
Oh, yeah. They have their own academy. So like I go to a peace officer standards and training, a post-certified academy. They go to a corrections academy, which is called a core academy. And actually, Lynn, we run that too. We run the core academy for a lot of the North State. They come here, they spend their several weeks at this academy training. They could become certified corrections deputies or officers, and then they go back to their jail and they're certified.
Or stay here.
Or I steal them steal and they come to work here.
Yes. And how long a program is that core training, roughly?
13 weeks, I think.
Yeah. It's not like years.
No. And it might even be less than that. I don't remember, to be honest with you, how it fluctuates, just like everything else. Laws change and the requirements change, so the weeks change sometimes too.
And don't you think there's an advantage, truly? The jail is currently right in the heart of downtown Reading. To have it not be in the heart of downtown Reading?
Absolutely. And that's one of the motivations for this move as well, is, Reading is the hub for Shasta County, not only for Shasta County, north of Sacramento, because of that, and your downtown businesses and all the restoration that's going on in downtown Reading, trying to make this a city that thrives, you don't need the jail in the downtown in the middle of it. And all the services that the inmates access that we talked about as well, we can move all that criminal justice-based out onto this campus and remove all that from downtown. And I think that is definitely the strategy when it comes to the jail in the long term and the vision of this.
Yes, I'm going to do a station ID. And so I want to branch out more into what's going to be that correctional and rehabilitation campus is going to look like, because we know we need it. And I know that there's a controversy because of the location near the River Ranch subdivision. So I think helping people to understand the location, the advantages, the plan, and how you're conscious of it being in a subdivision area. So if you just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I'm Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine. KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We are here in conversation with the Shasta County Sheriff, Michael Johnson. We are talking about the services that are currently the department handles, as well as specifically the jail system and the alternative, what's it called, alternative custody program? Yes. And thinking about this new corrections and rehabilitation campus that's in conversation and is a vision. Its location, proposed location, is the River Ranch subdivision, which is in a, you might say, residential section.
Well, it's next to the...
Next to.
Yeah.
And I can imagine being in that neighborhood and going, I don't want criminals.
Right.
What do you say to that?
Yeah, you know, I am completely sympathetic to the that neighborhood and that community over there, and I understand. I've even told them that, listen, if I live there, I probably wouldn't want to see something like this going in next to me either. But you have to understand that in my search for the location for this, there are several factors that come into play. One, I have to have enough space to put these three phases of this program on. I have to have usable space, and it has to be in proximity to the courthouse and to Reading, so because transportation and all that. And I have to have a place where I can isolate it and, if you will, hide it as best as I can, because I don't want to impact communities. And then there's one more factor, and that's cost of the land. So this land was identified through surplus land. I looked at all the surplus land that the county has and all the surplus land that the city of Reading has, and this was identified as the most feasible and the best location to serve all those things that I've just described. Now, in back to the neighborhood and the impacts of that neighborhood, I know they don't realize it right now, but they're actually going to be served better and safer by law enforcement, because there's going to be a heck of a law enforcement presence coming and going from this. We're not using any of their roads or going into their subdivision. We're putting quite a buffer of a field and orchard in between the project and them. We're leaving all that riparian area and all that riverfront growth and wildlife alone next to the river. We are tucking it back in those trees and hiding it away as best we can to least impact that community. Lynn, I could tell you this. When I first started looking at property, one of the first locations I had identified in a different phase of trying to get something like this into place was the area out the old transfer site off of Old Oregon Trail in 44. There's sizable acreage out there that I was looking at to do this project. And when I was even conceptually considering that, I had the people of Palo Cedro upset because of the proximity of that to Palo Cedro. Now, mind you, it's still 4 or 5 miles away from that, but I had opposition coming there. I'm going to have opposition no matter where we choose to put this. This is the best location and the least impact on the most amount of people for our county. I don't know a better way to say that. It is in the best interest of the greater good here. The River Ranch people are next to it. I am completely understanding of what their arguments are and what they're sensitive to, and I'm trying to do everything I can to mitigate that for them and to make it least impactful for them.
Yeah, and overall, relocating the jail eventually, because it's the third phase, correct?
Correct, yes.
Yes, eventually having that relocated out of downtown Reading.
Yes.
It's just a better plan than having it right in the middle of Reading. Plus, you're able to have specialized services expanded.
Yeah, and think about this. We talked about the design, and we're not going to go up and make this blight for the community down there.
Yep.
It's I doubt they'll even be able to hardly see it from once it's built out the way we've got laid out on the map. I've offered to or talked about putting up one of those big block cinder walls in between the border of the property so they don't have to see anything at all. I've gotten some feedback peripherally that they're not interested in that, and that's fine. It's been tough because I haven't been able to go and meet with these folks face to face. I've offered that initially when they came to Board of Supervisors and were protesting that, but there was a lawsuit launched by that neighborhood and that prohibited me from talking to them or mitigating anything with them. That lawsuit is currently getting wrapped up and coming to an end. So I'm going to be launching community engagement meetings actually as early as the first week of August. We've got one planned and start putting out facts about what the project is and what it entails and the truths about it. There is a lot of misinformation, yeah, incorrect information being spewed mostly out of fear and anxiety and not knowing the facts of what it is. I hope to get the correct information out as quick as possible as soon as this lawsuit is done.
Yes. And is there a place that people can go and get like the layout of the map that's about the project? Or is that the future?
That stuff is... I had a Public Records Act request for it recently, and I'm provided it. I've provided it to different community members who have come forward and asked me for it. I am going to make it all readily available through the website to view off our website and through these community meetings. I'm going to pass it out. It's no secret. I'm not trying to keep anything secret. I'm trying to be 100% transparent on everything we intend to do and what the project entails.
Yes, it sounds very amazing, actually. So the three phases of the project, let's outline those three phases.
Okay, so it's a 91-acre total piece of land, and there's three particular projects that make up the corrections and rehabilitation campus. And those projects are, one, the alternative custody program, which we talked about in length here early on, which is going to be an expanded version of a huge barn. We're going to do livestock, whole nine yards out there.
Wow.
That is one phase of it.
And that's a day program.
That's a day program, day reporting program. Second phase is the Male Community Reentry Program, MCRP is termed. Now, this one's very unique. The state runs several male community reentry programs now, none as far as north as us. This is their first venture at that. So how that works is inmates, state inmates in prison, not jails, prisons, that are on their last 2 years of their sentence in prison can apply to go into this male community reentry program, MCRP. If they're accepted, and there's parameters for that, you know, they won't take certain like sexual predators and things, yeah, into that. If they're accepted into that, they go into this for their last 2 years of their prison sentence. And during that last 2 years, it's a four-phase program where they start by identifying the needs of the inmate, and they help them get a California ID. They help set them up with medical and with everything foundationally for this person. In the second phase, they start an education and reprogramming, if you will. If you think about a person that's institutionalized, they need some reprogramming.
Yeah.
So they start reprogramming them. The third phase, they actually work on a vocation for them. They identify what they're interested in. So let's say the person wants to be a truck driver. So then now they start working on them to get a Class A license. They send them to a truck driving school. In and out, they're ankle monitored, they're supervised. It's a lockdown facility. This is a bedded facility. And then in the fourth phase, they actually are going out in the community several hours each day and doing a job with partner businesses and going to doctor appointments and kind of normal type of daily stuff that people do. Ankle monitored again and monitored the whole time. So the state's run these very successful over the past several years. And what I approached the state and state corrections about was, how about partnering with me, the county, and county corrections, and run a split facility where half of the facility is your state inmates, half the facility is my inmates from county. And they go through the same four-phase program, but truncated. So, because I don't have people, most people aren't in there for, you know, long sentences like 10 right. to 15 years like state inmates are. But so I agreed that anybody that has 6 months or more, or at least a minimum of 6 months left on their time served in the jail, can move to this program. And this program is run by a nonprofit. And the nonprofit that I've identified that does it best is Amity. And Amity runs several of these state MCRPs now. So the state likes this idea of a possible new model for corrections in California, a partnership with the county. They've never done it. So they've agreed and they budgeted, and it made the governor's budget, to do one of these facilities on site there.
Wow.
Now, again, this is a bedded facility. It's different. So we currently send people out of county that are in custody for me and pay a bed rate fee when we have an overflow like we do all the time. So it's the same type of thing with this one. We'd pay a bed rate for a person to go there. I will run the security on the county's half of this facility.
Yes.
And parole runs the security on the state side of there. So it's 24/7 security, windows, doors, perimeter monitoring, fenced, lockdown facility. It's a high profile type of custody situation, but with a very different program approach to reentry of these people. What people don't understand is we're getting these people back anyways. These are people yeah. that have come from Shasta County, been in prison, and are coming back to Shasta County anyways. So you either have them just get out of prison with no training and no reprogramming and come back into our community, or they go through a program like this.
Reentry. Yeah.
So the other part of this, Lynn, is this is a regional setup. So we, part of my agreement with the state was I wanted to make this regional to serve the northern counties, and true northern counties, not Sacramento and San Francisco.
Yeah, really. So
there's 13 counties identified with this. And in this program, we have been very demanding that if I get somebody from one of these 13 counties and they go through this program, at the completion of this program, they go back to their own county. We don't adopt them mm-hmm. in Shasta County. Now, they're free men once they're out of the system. So if they move back to our county, there's not much I can do to prevent that. But I will be sending them back to their county of origin to hopefully where they have family support and structure anyways and can reenter into the society.
I'm going to do a station ID. When we come back, one of the things, this is the male community reentry program.
Correct.
Is there something for women, for females? And then the other thing, thinking about, you hear people in the community will say, oh, they dump other inmates that are released from prison into Shasta County, those two things. If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We are here in conversation with Sheriff of Shasta County, Michael Johnson. We're talking about the Corrections and Rehabilitation Campus Project. So you will hear people say, I know they bring people, criminals are released from prisons from other counties throughout the state, and they dump them in Shasta County. Is that true?
It is true. It is to a degree. It's true. I mean, they don't just load up a full bus and dump them out. It's our turn. It doesn't work like that. But you know, I do not like this, Lynn. I've been fighting this my whole career in every community I've lived in. I don't think it's right, and they do it, and they will tell you right up front. They being California Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation (CDCR), they retain the right to place prisoners wherever they want in the state. The law has also changed with that too. It used to be that they would release prisoners generally back to the county of origin there yeah. where they committed the crime, whether they're from there or not. That has changed, and the law allows the inmate to select where they want to live if they can articulate a few basic criteria. One is, do they have any support network where they want to go? Two is, do they have a potential job in the county where they want to go? And three is, if they have any other type of situations which help them sustain a living in that particular county where they want to go.
Better life.
So it's pretty much opens a door for them to choose wherever they want to go. All they got to do is minimally articulate that and away they go. And on top of that, you have other type of programs that NGOs open, non-governmental organizations open at. Perfect example of Reading is a rehabilitated, if you will, motel that is now used as a temporary housing for transitional inmates. And it could be sex offenders. It could be some of these other high profile ones that we don't want. But if they qualify the program and they can provide the housing, then they'll ship the inmate there and release the inmate to that county. And I tell you, once again, I'm not for it. It makes me angry. I do not want that. And me and my justice partners constantly trying to come up with a way to combat that. And one of the ways I think that maybe we can get there as a city and as a county is perhaps pass some ordinance that don't allow for those type of licensing in our county.
That's a great idea.
Which is, I'd really like to see, because I don't want to take on other people's problems. And here's the rub with me too. And you know a little bit about this, about me, Lynn, and I need to tell our listeners. You need to understand I was once upon a time 100% against programs and anything, to do with that. I was for black and white. If you committed a crime, go to jail, do your time. That's accountability. And there's still a little bit of that in me that survives. But my true outlook with that is, and because now that I'm in charge of a jail and inmates and protecting our community, and I know the way California is, I have to come up with a plan that has accountability and that changes the cycle that we constantly see. There are success stories. There are people that can and want to change their lives and will participate, and we can make a difference with. I'm all for those. I am 100% against any program just for the sake of it being a program. It has to be successful. Otherwise, it's not worth my time. Yeah. It's not worth the community's effort and money to put into it. So I will not implement any type of program that can't prove its success and its worth. Yeah, but ones that do, and I do my diligence in researching them and vetting them out, I'm willing to put forth the effort and, help in the overall 360 view of criminal justice.
Do you think the number of change that can occur through programs is significant, or is it just a small percentage? Because I think that's what people wonder about too.
I think it can be significant based on the program and based on how much effort and oversight the program has. There's programs out there that are very successful, but there is way more programs out there that aren't.
Yeah.
And I think that is up to us as not just a community, but us as law enforcement and criminal justice leaders to vet those out and not just accept what's being put before us. The state likes to throw away money to anybody who has the right title or says that they meet a list of criteria in a program, and they'll do that just to get the money and run these programs. And their overhead with administration and running those programs is ridiculous, and they're not in it for the right reasons. So I think the ones that are successful can show you that it's worth it and it's worth implementing. But again, there's a lot of them out there that aren't. And those ones I have no room or tolerance for.
Yes. One of the things I want to ask you about, because of time here too, is the number of people that are shipped here out of the prison system that elect to come here because of what they see as the ideal for their situation. Is that a significant number of people?
It's significant enough where it's impacting our community. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I don't have that exact number for you.
Yeah.
But as, former Chief Barner and I were looking into, it's, significant enough where
it's an issue.
It makes us angry, and it's an issue, and we need to figure out a way around it or a way to stop some of it. Just like I mentioned,
the ordinance. Yeah, that would be a great idea. Also, we have this mail program going on, the Male Community Reentry Program. Is there anything for women?
There is, but the women, the population of women incarcerated in at the state level is so skewed as far as a small compared to men that they only run a couple of them in there in Southern California.
Okay.
And so it's not worth my effort to get one here because remember, part of my objective is putting people out of my jail into it. And I don't have a large enough women population to sustain that.
Yeah, that makes sense. So this is a bedded facility. How many beds is it supposed to be?
We're shooting for about 100, 90 to 100.
Yeah.
And probably 60 of those will go to the state and roughly 30, 35 of those will go to the county side.
Okay. We have just about 3 minutes left. So one of the things I wanted to be sure, is there anything on the alternative custody program, which is the day program, day reporting, and the male community reentry program, which is a bedded facility? Is there anything we haven't covered that you feel desperate to share?
No, one desperate thing though to fall back is I text while we were at break, and that Core Academy is currently 5 weeks.
5 weeks on the Core Academy for correctional officers.
For correctional officers.
So what about the jail? That's the third phase.
Third phase of the jail. So the jail, folks, is I hate to say this, but in my career and my tenure as sheriff, even if I'm going to run for sheriff again at the next round and try to do one more term, I will not see a jail built. Unless some money magically comes down the pike somewhere. But I am trying to set this up for my predecessor, my successor, that somewhere down the road, there will be the pendulum will shift again. There will be money come available for correctional facilities. And when that time comes, I want to have it all done. I want to have the CEQA done. I want to have power, sewer, water, all the infrastructure set up. So when that money comes, it's shovel ready and away the community can go with building that jail. But on the horizon, there's no plans for it to even be built.
Yeah. And I know there's been conversations for a very long time about the relocation of the jail. And it makes sense, you know, the whole design at one level, instead of the multiple stories and having modern current technology that supports the whole process.
Correct. And, you know, there's another aspect we didn't even talk about, and that is the aesthetics for the employees. Currently, they go to this jail. It's like going to a dungeon and working in a dungeon with the worst of the worst every day. It's horrible. You go to some of these other newer facilities and newer designs and the layout the way it is now, it's nice. And they like coming to work and they like their work environment. We want that as well because we have to keep staffing because you can't run a jail without staffing.
Plus, don't you think that environmental what I would call a healthier environment, not only impacts the officers, but also those incarcerated.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. I mean, it's the whole tone of everything.
You have less assaults on your staff. You have less assaults inmate to inmate. You have less problems. They're happier. They're easier to deal with.
Yes. So we're coming to the end of the program. If people want to get more information, you're going to be doing this community engagement meetings.
Yes.
And I think it's important, instead of tuning in to conversations you hear in the community that promote misinformation, attend one of the community engagement sessions. They can also, you're going to be posting it online so they can see the campus layout.
Yes.
And be thinking about, we have to do something.
Correct. We
And I do think the ordinance to keep them from shipping parolees to Shasta County is a good idea. Thank you for that.
Sure.
We'll get on that right away. So any closing comments?
You know, just as usual, I'd like to thank the community. The community's very law enforcement friendly in the North State here. As you know, as I kind of outlined my career, I've been several places, and I tell people this. I know people may think I just say this because I'm here now, but I don't. Shasta County is awesome, and the North State here, we're very privileged to live in the type of community environment that we live, and it's our job to try to make that better and to look out for the long term, and that's what we're trying to do here, is make it better and improve it for generations to come.
Yes. And so the encouragement for Shasta County Sheriff Michael Johnson, our listeners, myself, we want to make this day and every day a day to enjoy exceptional living. Thank you for joining us.